Clara kept her Bible right next to the phone in case she needed a quote while she talked to someone. In the memory she smiles while the blessing is said. Visions of freeze tag dance in my head. She says I'll grow up big if I eat all my roast. I'll still believe in heaven, but I won't believe in ghosts anymore. I'll put away childish things. I'll put away childish things.
We live. We fight. And we die. For each other. Not for you.
Well, there you go, boys and girls. You gotta grow up and put away those childish things. Hey, it's June the 1st. How about that? You got a whole new month to get things done right now. And it's a beautiful day here in the Midwest, northern Indiana. We're looking at a little rain, but it's not going to be much, and then it's going to get back to sunshine and health. Whoops, wait a minute, that's the old nudist magazine. We used to get chased out of the newsstand when I was a little kid, because we'd get in the back of Clark Lumaugh's newsstand, magazine stand. We'd get one of those sunshine and health down to look at all those naked people. I want to tell you, if you've ever been to a nudist colony, they're not too attractive, these people. Now that we got the date and the weather out of the way, let's go to work here. Well, Donald Trump really corked it yesterday. If you listen to that press conference he gave on this giving of veterans the money that he collected, about $6 million, and, you know, since he didn't send it right out or something like that, or maybe his secretary forgot to put the stuff in the mail, the New York or Washington Post went crazy and attacked him all over the place. So he had a press conference to discuss it. And he did something I've been wanting somebody to do for a long time. He uncorked on the press like you wouldn't believe. It was the funniest thing I heard. Called them every name in the book, and they deserve. They're so spoiled. And then today they're all on there, all these people talking. All these reporters, oh, how horrible he was, and it's horrible. This shows you what a bad man he is and all that kind of stuff. I've been waiting for somebody to uncork on these goddamn press people for years, and nobody of notoriety ever did. So I gotta hand it to Donald Trump. He got my vote for that. Anyhow, incidentally, I got this German film crew coming over on the 15th, and they're mainly interested in my different views on Donald Trump. And, you know, my view is he's stirring chaos, and chaos is good, especially when things are so stagnant and corrupt. Chaos is wonderful. And, you know, a couple of reporters that I talked to before, in fact, I think it was the Washington Post, they didn't understand that. What do you mean, chaos? I said, well, chaos benefits my point of view, and as long as Donald Trump does that, even up to the point where the Electoral College doesn't award him the presidency, even if he wins it, like Al Gore got screwed out of his. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. But and, of course, a lot of things Trump says I agree with, and, you know, things I don't agree with. He wants to spend a hell of a lot more money on armaments and so-called defense, which to me is the war budget and stuff like that. But anyhow, have fun while it lasts. But anyhow, I'm going to be playing that interview or that news story back quite a few times a day when he calls a reporter a low life and I forget what all he called him, but it was funnier than hell, man. And the press are trying to play the game that he's going to lose a lot of votes for that. He just went too far attacking the First Estate, as Jerry Brown used to call them, the First Estate. That's the press. They think their shit don't stink and they can get away with anything. And they do get away with almost anything. But maybe that's beginning to come to the end. Maybe Trump is starting a trend here where these people that usually lay down and take it are going to stand up and tell them what for. What do you think? But there's only one thing worse than the media in this country, the corporate-owned media, and that is the State Department. The State Department does a lot more damage over a period of time, but the press does a hell of a lot of damage, too. They think they're some kind of dictatorship, you know. But yet, when I send a letter to the paper locally, they want to print it because I got no taste. I want to thank my friends from Spokane for being the first out of the chute with their donation for the month. That's a big hi-yo to the people in Spokane. You know, I get quite a few of these young students who email me and ask questions or want to do an interview, and mostly they want me to answer their questions. And here's a typical one, which I won't respond to. Kid just turned 18, and he's from Britain. How you became involved in the Ku Klux Klan, the war, and the Democratic Party? Well, you can find all that out on YouTube. What degrees, if any, do you have? I don't have one damn degree. But I got a pretty good pedigree. What is your work like? What are your views and why do you hold these views? What was your upbringing? I'll answer it, but not the way he wants it answered, I'm sure. Always tell who the teacher is when these kids send you questions. Teacher, what should I ask this horrible man? Well, you ask him horrible questions. That's just like they do Mr. Trump. Any of you guys out there have a copy of David Lane's book, Victory Over Valhalla, or know where we can get it cheap, let me know. Most of those things that Dave put out have been cornered by interesting people, and they jacked the price way up. So anyhow, we got a POW that wants to get a copy of that. I sent a guy the March of the Titans book, too, a couple of weeks ago, and it didn't get into the prisons, and I don't understand about that, because normally if you have it shipped from a book dealer, you have no problem. But if you want to send a book, say you've got a book in your library you want to send to a POW, well, one way you can do it, and usually it gets through, is that you list on the letterhead or on the envelope that you're a book publisher, okay, a bookseller, or just cut it out of another envelope or something, just paste it on yours, and put an invoice in there that it was a so-called bookshop or something, and mark it so much money in the book and paid, put that in the book, and then put it in an envelope and send it off, and usually it'll get through. Not always. Depends. State prisons and federal prisons, they all different, have different rules. Here's a note, a partial note from Dennis Mahan, who's been right wing since God was born. And he's doing 40 years now, and I give him hell quite a bit of the time and try to remind him of how he screwed up. Well, maybe this will help other people. I'll pass it along to you. Yes, Tom, my out-of-control Everclear consumption, which is like white lightning, if you know anything about liquor, from 1996 to 2009 is directly responsible for my arrest and conviction. Not exactly, Dennis. Your own self-control and you're responsible for yourself is what was responsible for your arrest and conviction. Everclear, drinking it every day, kept me in an alcoholic fog and clouded my judgment to the point that I did not realize I was being manipulated by my good-looking, blonde, sexy 32-year-old ex-model and exotic dancer, Rebecca Williams, for 5 years. Well, I remember when he lived in a mobile home park out there in Arizona, and I remember when this gal moved into the park. I remember he mentioned it to her, and she lived in the next trailer or down the street from him. And he was letting her come into his trailer all the time, and he was letting her get into his computer and everything else. And I kept saying, watch this chick, Dennis, watch this chick. I think you're asking for trouble. Now, it took her 5 years to set him up, but she did get it done. It took them 5 years. Imagine what the BATF spent, the federal government spent, to get Dennis Mahon. See, money's no object. They'll put somebody next to you for years like this, 5 years. That's a long time. And normally people would think, well, she'd show her colors in maybe a few months or a year. But she was sticking around for 5 years just to nail Dennis. So they'll spend any amount of money. Anyhow, and she got paid, I think it was $50,000 or something like that for setting him up. But really, in reality, the booze set him up. Anyhow, he goes on to say, oh, I was at USP McCreary Alcohol Anonymous chairman for 7 months before I got transferred to FCI Pekin, Illinois. Well, anyhow, so now he's back into Alcoholics Anonymous, but you see, that's closing the door after the damn horses out of the barn. So I don't write him about it all the time. He writes me a letter once in a while, but I remind him that don't blame it on the girl. Don't blame it on the booze. Blame it on yourself. If you're a soldier and you've been around for a long time, you know what the score is, and you know they're out to get you. You may be paranoid, but that doesn't mean they're not out to get you. And they will if you let your guard down. And I would have totally dropped him as a correspondent quite some time back, other than the fact that he has invested a lot of time and money into the struggle over the years. He's spent thousands and thousands of dollars. He appeared with me on Oprah Winfrey's show and lost his high-paying job with the airlines. He was making big money with the airlines and like that. And he did covered my ass in Canada when I went up there to do some political stuff. And he did a lot of good stuff. So anyhow, for that reason, we're going to keep him on as a POW. Well, I guess Egypt got in trouble, or somebody in Egypt. Egypt has denied allegations of racism after one of its diplomats was accused by a Kenyan government official of referring to sub-Saharan Africans as dogs and slaves. The row was sparked after an unnamed Egyptian official allegedly made the comment at the United Nations Environmental Assembly in Nairobi, Kenya, which took place from May 23rd to the 27th. Yvonne Kamati, a diplomat in Kenya's mission to the UN Environmental Program, confirmed on Tuesday that a formal complaint had been made with the Kenyan Foreign Ministry about the alleged incident. Wow. Wow, man, that's something else. They better apologize right now and give those black people a bunch of money down there in Kenya. Well, I guess you've all heard about the gorilla killing at the Cincinnati Zoo. My opinion about zoos is this, that we have video now on big screen TV that almost everybody's got, that you can bring much better views of wild animals on big screens than you actually can in person. I think zoos have become an archaic throwback. And I don't agree with having zoos myself. Of course, that's just my opinion. Okay, as you have likely heard, on this past Saturday, a 4-year-old boy fell into the gorilla habitat at the Cincinnati Zoo. A gut-wrenching decision was made by the zoo to shoot and kill the gorilla to protect the boy and rescue him from the habitat. Now what happened here? Wait a minute. And it goes on to say, the fallout over the incidents has taken a decidedly racist turn as the public has now discovered that the boy and his parents are black. I would have guessed that early on because blacks and Mexicans don't watch their kids generally very well in a crowd. I've seen it over and over again. It goes back to the days when Carl Strait, my security man at the time, and I saved this black baby we were driving down the street and stopped at a stop sign, and there was a thoroughfare there, and here was a black baby about a year, maybe 2 years old, crawling across the street, a well-traveled highway. I said, "Carl, get him." And Carl jumped out and went out and got the baby and then found the mother and gave it to her. But this is the way it is with more. I mean, white people do it too, but I mean, blacks and browns let their kids run amok in the grocery stores and every place else. But I would have suspicioned, being the racist bastard I am, that the parents were black. Laura Collins in Cincinnati, writing for the Daily Mail, published an absolutely despicable piece on the young boy's parents to expose the fact they are black, including every detail of the father's criminal history. Wow. The actual lead headline in her piece was all about how the young boy's father, Dion Dickerson, had committed many crimes before. Usually you can tell about these things because they don't show pictures of the parents. Or when it's a racial crime, many times they won't show the picture of the perpetrator. Buried deep in the story was the fact that he is gainfully employed and appeared to be a loving father with a myriad of photos found on him. The story, a hit job by Dickerson, has already shared over 26,000 times on Facebook. Their tweet about his criminal history was one of their most popular of the day. What Laura Collins and the Daily Mail failed to share is it does not appear that the boy's father was even at the zoo with his family on Saturday. Well, where in the hell was he? Why then mention him at all? Why name him? Well, he should have been there with his kid. That's why they mentioned him. So, the father wasn't there. He was off doing something else or doing somebody else, and the mother didn't keep track of the kid. You got to put a... You know, back in the day, they used to have these little halters you put on kids that were prone to running off, sort of almost like a dog leash that you can hold on to them. And believe me, in some cases, that is needed, I'm telling you. You go into Walmart or any place where there's a bunch of Mexicans and blacks, but mostly Mexicans, you'll see toys all over the floor, crap drug all over the floor. They pick up everything off the shelf and get their dirty little mitts on it and everything else. It's the way they act. It's the way they operate. It goes along with the race. You know, the one thing we got to congratulate the Presidente, Obama, with was when he made the statement, a very, very intelligent statement, one that I totally agree with. Racism is in the DNA. Yeah. And a lot of the liberals and progressives and all that are going crazy over that was very racist of him. Well, of course, because racism is a part of the DNA. I mean, just think of it. If you had an animal on the African veld down there and you checked out the DNA or the genes or whatever, somewhere in that brain you're going to find in that rabbit or whatever it is, a gene that says, "Watch out for the goddamn lion." You don't have to teach him that. He learns that immediately. He knows that instinctively. It's called instinct. Instinct is part of the racial thing. I mean, you can't get away from it. But the more they deny it, the more it's true. So anyhow, all you racist white people out there, when Obama says racism is in the DNA, give him credit for it, man. Here we go with an article written by the protected class, a woman, a black woman named Shanita Hubbard. And she's going to tell us about it. I'm telling you, she's going to say that, let me read it to you here, some of it. Even good kids get targeted by a system that penalizes black children for being themselves. No, it recognizes them for what they are. Being twice as good won't save you from becoming a target. Just ask 18-year-old Andrew Jones of Amite, Louisiana, who was denied an opportunity to serve as his class valedictorian despite earning 4.0 grade point average. Jones was not permitted to participate in his high school graduation. According to reports, the student was stopped at the gate of the school and informed that his beard which he'd worn throughout the school year, was in violation of the dress code. After he refused to shave, the school took his gown, and Jones watched the ceremony like a spectator. This despite the fact that it's also been alleged that other students had with facial hair from the same district participated in the graduation ceremony. This is a kind of racism, or phony racism, I can't stand. Using excuses for a beard or anything like that. They didn't like him because he's black, and maybe he was planking white girls or whatever, but instead of doing it the straight out honest way and saying, "Rastus, we just don't like your ass. You're not going to be the valedictorian." I believe in being straight out with it. Don't beat around the bush and blame it on something else. Here's another one. Or you can ask 18-year-old Taylor Ball of Chicago, who's black, who was banned from his senior prom for using the N-word in a poem at school. The poem was addressed to black girls, and the word was used to illustrate how some white women view black men as mere accessories. The audience responded well to the poem, but the same cannot be said for the administration. Ball, a National Honor Society member, which means nothing today, and a recipient of more than $1 million in scholarship offers, can you believe it? was not allowed to attend her prom and came close to missing her own graduation. Jeez. It's horrible how these poor black people are treated. It's terrible. She got $1 million in offers to go to college and she's being picked on. Fortunately, people like Roland Martin from TV One and others in the black press have made this discussion public. After Jet.com broke the story, several readers took to social media to demonstrate their support and seek answers from the school's administration. Then on May 25th, it was announced that Ball would in fact be permitted to attend her graduation. See how these whites, mostly whites, run for cover? The minute they bitch. See, the blacks learned this from the Jews. You know, all you have to do is say, "I think that guy's anti-Semitic." And hell, everybody runs for the woods. The blacks learned it from the Jews, and it's a very effective, but it doesn't work with us when they call, say, "Yeah, white racist son of a bitch." Well, it doesn't work that way with us. We don't get a break. But I don't need a break. You don't need a break. Black students, regardless of GPA or background, are often recipients of more punitive school disciplinary actions. And Tommy would say many times from black administrators. They don't add that to it. Respectability, politics, be damned, and this issue didn't start with these two students. School's overly punitive treatment of black students is deeper and more pervasive than the occasional missed prom or graduation walk. Message, administrators, leave black kids alone. Just dogpile on white kids or Asian kids, probably. Black students in general are 3 times more likely to be suspended or expelled than white students. Well, that's obvious because of the way they act. Just go down to a school that's got a lot of blacks in and just sit across the street for a while and watch the way they act. I mean, you know, they're still coming at you with their equal. Equal. This is especially problematic considering that disciplinary problems at school can lead to a student's first contact with the juvenile justice system, which contributes to the school-to-prison pipeline. Well, most of the blacks who are in prison belong there. I mean, not all of them, but most of them belong there. They've committed crimes. They say, "Oh, it's horrible there's so many black people in prison." Well, if they quit committing all these crimes, they wouldn't be in prison. Now, that's a simple answer to that, you know. And when a cop stops you, answer the questions and keep your mouth shut. The cop says, "Stop, put your hands up," like any sane person would do. Not that I'm a big super supporter of cops, but survival is important. And if you try to play games, you just play into their hands.
Microsoft all just announced they're vowing to crack down on hate speech online, and this is coming as we're all in the middle of a heated election that has also brought about the issue of racism and what it looks like today, even among candidates. Joining us now this morning, Caprice Hollins with Cultures Connecting. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Casey. It's exciting to be here.
It's exciting to have this conversation. Yeah. I think it's an important one, especially when it comes to kids.
Yeah.
And I just want to jump right in. Kids are hearing a lot of this in the news.
Yeah.
How do you have that conversation with your kids, and how is that conversation different for white families versus minority families?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, first of all, we know that kids do notice difference, and the question is, are we helping them to engage around difference, or are we leaving them alone to kind of try to make sense of it themselves? And when we leave them alone to make sense of it, they'll do all kinds of things with it. So just having conversations about the difference between people's behaviors rather than actually joining in and doing kind of name calling ourselves. So a lot of times parents, if they feel negatively towards Trump, for example, might start calling Trump names in front of their children, which is then behavior that the children can then take to the school and start talking about other children in these kind of name calling ways. So more about kind of naming the behaviors that are not appropriate or that we don't care to see in other people. We know that parents of color tend to talk with their children about race, whereas white parents don't necessarily know that that's something that they need to do. In fact, when children at about age 3, they start taking in stereotypes. They start taking in those messages that they're getting from the media and from society. And so a lot of times white parents think that if they don't talk about difference, if they operate under colorblind ideology, that that's a way to get children to avoid that negative type of behavior that they don't want to see in their children. Parents of color have to prepare their children to live and navigate a society that is doing something, usually something negative, with the color of their skin. So their preparation may not be like I am with my children, which is a whole monologue around trying to prepare them to go out to the mall or, you know, to be riding the bus or what have you. But it's much more subtle. You know, before you go to the mall, you know, I want to remind you, here's how you need to behave. Wanting to know who they're going to be hanging out with, not just because of will the person that they're be hanging out with have negative or positive behaviors, but more around how might the attention get drawn to my child of color in a way that they might not get, that might not get drawn to a white child. So there's much more kind of subtle things that parents are saying that adolescents sometimes won't understand, children of color won't understand until they become adults. Oh, that's what why my parent was cautioning me about what to do when I get pulled over by a police.
What does racism look like today? And I ask you that question because it sounds like that's part of what the issue is that, you know, people study how it was in the past and sometimes forget that it's some of that is still happening, but that's in addition to some of the more subtleties.
Yeah. Racism today gets played out through people's implicit bias, through their unconscious bias. So we can never prove that we got pulled over or that we were followed in the mall because of the color of our skin, but we very much believe, based on our past experiences and based on the experiences of people who look like us, that it is because of the color of our skin that someone is treating us differently, asking to see two pieces of ID for me, not asking to see any ID for you.
How do you talk to your kids about the fact that that's what's happening, whether you're a white parent or a minority? Because everybody needs to be aware that that is happening. And you mentioned that that conversation isn't happening as often in white families.
Right. And let me just add, Casey, that white children will internalize a sense of superiority because these things are not happening to them. The stereotypes. So they'll grow up believing that they are everything that they are just because they worked hard and not have a sense or understanding that people experience the world very differently or get get treated in the world very differently.
Right.
Same thing can be true for kids of color, that they can internalize a sense of inferiority as they're having these different experiences of being treated negatively. So a couple of things, like I talk with my, as my son is getting older, I might show him a video that shows some research where, like a what would you do video that shows the difference in the way teens of color are treated versus whites in the same exact situation. I might come across some new information around how even discrimination can happen based on an Asian person's name or a African American or Latino person's name. With younger children, slow the conversation down. You know, be curious with them. How did that make you feel when you heard that your friend was called that name? What did you say to them? How did you treat that friend? What would that be like if you were talked to like that? Have you ever felt that way before? And then start to lead into how society treats people differently because of the color of their skin.
Caprice Hollins, yeah. I could sit here and talk to you about this topic all day.
Yeah.
Would you be willing to come back so that we can dive even more deep
into
this?
Yeah, I'd love to. I could talk about it all day, too. You can see I love to talk.
No, I love it.
Now, you could imagine if this interviewer would have put this woman's feet to the fire and got into the criticisms of the black race and what they deserve and their refusal to accept responsibility for their own actions, what this woman would have done. She'd have become hysterical. Now, number one, this woman, I don't consider her black, and I don't consider her white. She's a mulatto. Her skin was very light. She either, if she is black, she had a nose, or she didn't have a, well, she had a nose, it looked like she'd had a nose job, but if not, she's got a lot of white in her. And I get totally incensed when they say it's their skin color. I don't think that at the root of it, it's about skin color. I think that color is only the visible markings, nature's markings of a person. And these people will use that all the time. You're just against me because of my skin color. No, I'm against you because of the way you act, the way your race acts, and the way you have not evolved properly and so forth. The skin just happens to be one of the things that come along with it as a marker, really, for the other animal species to stay away from you. That's the way I look at it. I mean, you know, like I've said many times before, a rabbit sitting on a trail down in Africa, he sees a lion coming. He knows what a lion looks like. He knows what color the lion is, and he knows right away, I'm not going to sit around and argue and debate whether it's a good lion or a bad lion or whether he's going to eat me or not. I'm getting the hell out of here. It's as simple as that. If man would look more upon themselves as higher animals, they'd understand themselves much better. I was discussing this with somebody that's not racial not too long ago, and he said, why do we do these things? Because once in a while, white people do bad things, serial killers and so forth. And I said, because we're higher animals. And that sort of closed the conversation. He didn't say any more. I said, we're higher animals, and animals do animal things. In fact, higher animals do even wilder things. Where an animal just eats the bunny rabbit, human animals start a war and kill 10 million people. But it's still an animal trait, because the animal don't have the technology to do it. Here we go with another one. In a nation where skin color is linked to negative racial stereotypes and negative outcomes for black people, and they say black people as this over broad description of the Negroes, Republican political campaigns employ darker skin complexion in ads to appeal to the anti-black racism of their voters. Well, they're racist, of course. And racists do what racists do. In the broad sense of the word, it's part of the protection trying to defend the white race. You might say, well, that's not really the most cricket way to do it, but your enemies don't use cricket ways either. According to a new study, skin complexion was used in the 2008 presidential race through negative campaign ads. Well, I agree that they should come right out and say it, and they shouldn't be beating around the bush. That's why I say the Republican Party has never been fit, really, to lead the white race, even though from time to time there's been people in it with their Southern strategy, which had nothing to do with defending the white race. It had to do with gaining all the voters that the Democrat Party had lost. And the whites have depended on the Republican Party for defense. Of course, the whites had nowhere to go, really, because there was no really racial party. And probably the best thing they could have done was hung on to the Democrat Party. There was such a large number of white working class in the Democrat Party. If they'd have gone into the conventions and gone into the local party apparatus and controlled it and kept a hold of it, it would have been better probably in the long run for the massive number of white working people to have held on to the Democrat Party. I mean, even no matter how much of a fight it would take, a knockdown, drag out fight in these conventions and so forth. But they didn't do it, so they tried to hang on to the predatory capitalist party of the Republican Party, which has never really cared about any white people but the white elite, the white rich. I think most people know by now that professional sports has been one of the main entry points for non-whites to infiltrate the white race. And now there's spokesmen, black spokesmen in the sports thing. And it's been going on for a long time. Just because white guys want to sit around and watch nigger ball and all that kind of stuff and watch the white cheerleaders fawning over these black players and stuff like that. Well, Germany international Jerome Boateng, who's black, has told Der Western that racism in the country of Germany is far from gone. Well, that's good. But thanks to Chancellor Angela Merkel for her treason against the white race and so forth and so on. Gauland of Germany's right-wing Alternative for Deutschland party said in the Frankfurt Allgemeine Sonntag Zeitung on Sunday that he would not want to have Boateng as a neighbor. Well, that's his prerogative. You don't want to get niggers a neighbor, you don't want the niggers a neighbor. The untouchable, I mean. Let me see here. The statement made during a background talk last week drew widespread condemnation in Germany from all the race-mixing bastards. Reinhard Raubel, president of the German Football League, called them unjustifiable. Everybody wants to have a Negro neighbor. Everybody should know that. Boateng, the black guy, welcomed Merkel's response, saying, "That pleases me, especially since she said in no uncertain terms what I believe is important not only for me, but also for the country when Angela Merkel said, we love black people, we want everybody to have a black neighbor." 3 years ago, Kevin Prince Boateng, Jerome's half-brother, led A.C. Milan off the pitch in protest at racist abuse. Well, I don't think they should be abused, so they should ship them back to their country of origin. Quit abusing these nigger sports people, these untouchable sports people. Ship them back home to where they can be among all their friends who are black and have black neighbors. Forcing a friendly at the Italian 4th Division side, Po Patria, to be abandoned. Well, whatever that was. The former Ganda midfielder was later invited to the United Nations, where he got to speak. Racism is a serious problem. I don't have a white girlfriend yet. It's a dangerous and infectious virus which is strengthened by indifference and inaction. Well, I hope it's a virus, and I hope that virus stays healthy, and I hope they don't find any kind of a cure for it. because it's what's keeping the white race alive. Bayern Munich defender Boateng said to Weston, quote, I also don't want to ignore it, but I don't want to give those people too much attention and a platform. Oh, heavens forbid. And I also don't want to get too much attention compared to my teammates who are black also. Quote, we have several other players who have their roots in other countries. That's a nice way of saying they're not white. I see myself attacked in place of others. Yeah, well, you're a symbol, baby. Boateng, who captained the national team during the second half of Sunday's friendly match against Slovakia, acknowledged that much has been done to tackle racism in Germany, but added, it's far from gone. If there's one racist white guy left in Germany, it's way too many. It's sad that we fall back into stuff like that. I hope we are past it. Well, that's the way it goes, man. Poor guy, he can't get a white neighbor. But I'll bet you any amount of money he's got white girlfriends and probably white half-breed kids. There was a big article on racism here, and I just, you try to reply, and you got to go through Facebook. But we know that Facebook has weeded out perhaps millions of people they don't like, and I'm one of them. They've discontinued my account simply because my responses were not what they wanted to hear, not because they were really nasty. And so I was going to respond, of course we white people are racist. As the president says, quote, it's in our DNA. I mean, you know, the president's half white, right? So that was the white side there speaking. But all these extreme liberal type outfits will ban you if you come out with anything pro-white. Of course, all the other people doing other things that get banned from Facebook, they're screaming their heads off, but they'll never scream in their heads off or say anything objecting to putting us off the air. So should we have any sympathy for the other side, the race mixers and all that? Not one bit, baby. A pox upon all their houses. I believe in being twice as hard on whites who are renegade whites who do not fight and stick up for their own race. If I have hatred in my heart, believe me, it goes mostly to those people. Blacks can't change what they are. They are what they are, and, you know, they're trying to work it out, you know. But whites who betray their own race, their own nation and all that kind of stuff, I have absolutely no sympathy at all what happens to them. I see one of the headlines on this gorilla killing says, gorilla killed to protect boy because of white privilege. Jesus. I'm telling you, man, they're out there. Here's an example of Facebook. North NSW man charged over racist Facebook rant at Novus Paris. This is in Australia. So obviously the authorities and Facebook are working hand-to-hand to trap people or go after people who care whether they're white or not and don't bow down to the Aborigines. We got some excitable white guys out there. Five teens, Cameron Bodenstab, 18, Christian Jokel, 18, Ethan Sigmund, 18, Hayden Hanalaka, 17, and Ryan Westbrook, 17, were all arrested for spray painting hate messages and racial slurs on Martin High School buildings. Christian Jokel confessed to the police of spray painting a penis and writing whites only on a fountain wall where students mostly drink, while Hanalaka admitted that he wrote fuck Martin High School and painted monkey bars on the school wall, which indicates to me they got an overpresence of blacks in that school and the whites detect there's a problem. The student at Arlington High, Kristen Pham, said for them to do something like that to another school is very disrespectful and immature. No, it's probably desperation. I feel like we're all miniature adults and should be treating each other as such. However, the five students were set on a $2,500 bond each and were charged with state felonies for damages of school property that cost about $20,000 for a painting a sign. Police spokesman LT Chris Cook said the hate crime statute will be presented to the grand jury. Since they're felonies, there will have to be a hearing for the indictment. If they're convicted, they could spend months in jail. Get this? You get this? Painting a sign on the wall? It said cost the school $20,000. Bullshit. Now they want to charge him with a felony hate crime. Well, they're going to have to, whites are going to have to learn that don't waste your bullets or whatever on simple things. The time is coming where you may have to graduate into much higher situations. But I'd say find a congressman and paint the damn sign on his face or his back or his car or something, because they're all a bunch of creeps. Or maybe not. Be a lone wolf, quiet. A white submarine sailing at periscope depth. They fear what they don't see much more than what they see. Question of the day on White Lives Matter? More? The Memorial Day is over. The question about it are still here. Should the victims who have died from police violence, namely untouchable black people, be honored on Memorial Day? Why, hell yes, let's just throw it all in there. Throw it all in. Why not? Well, we'll close out here with a pessimist's guide to history again today. Now, I don't know where in the hell this place is. Oh, wait a minute. This is in Wisconsin. 1871, fire ravages Peshtigo. Months of drought had baked dry the woods and grasslands around Peshtigo and other nearby towns in eastern Wisconsin. On the evening of October 8th, hot, dry, gale-force winds arrived, winds that hundreds of miles to the east caused the Great Chicago Fire that same evening. When the wind hit, the small fires already burning in the woodlands were suddenly whipped up into the great walls of flames racing towards Peshtigo. Most of the 2,000 residents had no warning. The sun had just set. Families were settling down in their homes to spend a pleasant Sunday evening together. Only a few lumbermen and mill workers outside the gusting winds saw the angry red glow on the horizon and realized that danger was approaching. No one, however, was prepared for the firestorm that followed. Peshtigo, as it happened, was surrounded by swamps that during the long hot days of recent months had been producing significant amounts of swamp gas containing explosive methane gas. Well, before the advancing fires actually reached Peshtigo, the searing heat touched off the swamp gas in a huge explosion. The fiery blast sent scorching hot jets of air rolling through the town, blowing roofs off buildings and lifting whole houses into the air. The blast of searing air was so hot that anything combustible, from horse carts to whole buildings, burst into flames, and dozens of people died simply from breathing the superheated air. Meanwhile, the winds continued to blow full force, picking up cinders and chunks of burning debris and creating a veritable hurricane of fire. A great gust of wind lifted one whole house off its foundation and high into the air, where it exploded and showered burning debris on the people below. Hundreds of frantic townspeople who survived the initial blast raced to the nearby Peshtigo River and submerged themselves into its swiftly moving waters. Others crowded into the bridge, onto the bridge, hoping that the conflagration would not cross the river. But the high wind swept the fire over the water, settling on the other bank on fire. Then the bridge ignited in a massive burst of flames and suddenly collapsed, dumping hundreds of townspeople, horses, and carts into the swirling river. In the center of town, volunteer firemen attempted to battle the blaze engulfing them, but the fire rose. Fire hose burned to ashes almost immediately. Elsewhere, desperate men lowered wives and children into wells on top of goods hastily stashed there by merchants. Instead of finding sanctuary, however, the hapless refugees suffered a horrible, horrifying fate. The goods ignited and burned them all alive. The intense heat of the flames reduced everything to cinders. About 50 victims sought shelter in a brick building, thinking its sturdy walls would protect them from the flames. The next day, however, nothing was left but white ashes and two watches. Similarly, seven men were seen digging a ditch when the conflagration hit, but all that remained afterwards were their charred, shoveled blades. By the time the awful inferno had burned itself out, Peshtigo had been totally destroyed and 1,152 of its citizens had been burned alive, as well as some 350 people in nearby towns. The fire burned over 4 million acres of forests and grasslands before dying out. So there's your interesting tragedy from the past. That was back, 1871. So if you think you got it bad now, you could have been living back then. Yeah. Here's a note from one of our lone wolves out there, a she-wolf. When I first seen the report of the three-year-old that was in the gorilla pen at the Cincinnati Zoo, I thought the zoo was correct in taking out the gorilla due to the possibility of the child being harmed. Then after DVR's report and reviewing it with the option of slow motion, stop action, I seen that the child was a Negro, politically incorrect term. After having that information, I thought it was wrong that the gorilla was taken out, as I believe the parental instincts would have taken over and protected the child. Attached is a photo of the gorilla with the child taken with my camera from television. You know, yeah, from the first pictures that I saw, it looked like a white kid. They had lightened up the film, evidently, and it looked like he was dragging a white kid around. But this picture shows that he was a black kid. You realize how much that gorilla was worth to the zoo? Fantastic amount of money, if you're looking at it from a money standpoint. And there's so many black kids around, their value is not too high. Well, that's it for today. Wotan's Day, David Lane's favorite day. I'll be back tomorrow on Thor's Day. How about, boy, this week's going fast. 14-5, and enjoy the chaos, boys and girls. It's going to get a lot more chaotic. Ha, ha, ha.
If you'll gather round me, children, a story I will tell about pretty boy Floyd, an outlaw. Oklahoma knew him well. It was in the town of Shawnee, a Saturday afternoon. His wife beside him in his wagon, as into town they rode. There a deputy sheriff approached him in a manner rather rude. Vulgar words of anger, and his wife she overheard. Pretty boy grabbed a log chain, and the deputy grabbed his gun. In the fight that followed, he laid that deputy down. Then he took to the trees and timber to live a life of shame. Every crime in Oklahoma was added to his name. But a many a starving farmer, the same old story told, how the outlaw paid their mortgage and saved their little homes. Others tell you about a stranger that come to beg a meal. Underneath his napkin left a $1,000 bill. It was in Oklahoma City. It was on a Christmas day. There was a whole carload of groceries come with a note to say, well, you say that I'm an outlaw, you say that I'm a thief. Here's a Christmas dinner for the families on relief. Guess it's through this world I've wandered. I've seen lots of funny men. Some will rob you with a six gun and some with a fountain pen. And as through your life you travel, yes, as through your life you roam, you won't never see an outlaw drive a family from their home.